I decided to make a video about this Rage Against the War Machine thing because these people just make me mad. In many ways, Rage Against the War Machine is a culmination and manifestation of observations regarding the dirtbag left, alt-imperialists, whatever you want to call these people over the past 6 months or so. When I decided to begin making videos, the goal was not to talk about the left. The goal was to talk about far-right reactionary politics. And at first, I found it ironic. I was spending so much time on these so-called leftists who were clearly acting in bad faith. But over time, it became apparent to me that it actually made perfect sense, as these people weren't separate from those who I initially sought to investigate and critique, but were simply one and the same. Rage Against the War Machine is itself inherently reactionary. It isn't simply asking protesters to temporarily align with those that they might have slight disagreements with. It is itself reactionary, as the driving ideological forces of the imperialism which it advocates for are steeped in traditionalism, justifying bigotry and hate. There are speakers who post harmful and hateful tropes on social media daily, while others are objectively pro-war, such as Doug McGregor, a Bush-era military contractor and Trump's Pentagon advisor. Scott Ritter, a serial sex offender who openly supports genocide, was asked to be a speaker, then not to be a speaker after rightful outrage, but then came back as a speaker as not to be canceled by that appropriate outrage. Again, because this is a reactionary group of grifters. This is not a protest nor a rally. This is an event. The profit is represented in a fundraising goal, which increased numerous times without a clear explanation for why. It is not tax exempt. Rage Against the War Machine is not a movement or a slogan or a hashtag. Rage Against the War Machine is a registered corporation, like Nick Brana's People's Party is. It spits on all grassroots activists who legitimately care about a multitude of causes and is itself a spectacle of capitalism. This is a divisive pro-war money grab geared to create chaos and infighting on the left. The spectacle is 100% projection. It's a collection of images and slogans used to break the social relations and bonds necessary for true global solidarity. That solidarity is to be replaced with reactionary traditionalist ideology posing or being represented with the former's aesthetics. It dismisses solidarity as imperialism, which is why the only solidarity this group does find is with reactionaries, cops, and governments, as opposed to activists and protesters abroad. While Western imperialism needs to be defied, that is not what this does. This is an attempt to justify an imperialism, Russia's illegal annexation of territory from a former colonial state, and it's using government propaganda on par with weapons of mass destruction and Islamic terrorists in Iraq to do so. The difference is that this colonial imperial struggle is centuries old. One could say that it's simply that basic, and these grifters have repackaged foreign pro-war propaganda into a contrarian stance for a domestic audience to gain views and cash. However, for some, it is more than that. For some, it is indeed ideological. The bad actors involved in this pro-war money grab and their version of multipolarity align with the far right in the US and abroad. This is why they emphasize such a need to work with extremist figures and fundamentalist right-wing politicians. Perhaps in a more basic form, these are pro-war advocates who seek to infiltrate, troll, and divide the left by claiming a pro-Russian stance is actually anti-war while making money doing so and providing entryism for far-right conspiracy and ideology into left spaces, which marginalizes many of the very people for whom the left advocates for in the name of solidarity. Many of these speakers, such as Jimmy Dore and Jackson Hinkle, have no qualms with war so long as the correct side is the aggressor. They also have no issue going on to state media outlets to say so for profit. They have no concern over human rights violations and often promote conspiracy and state propaganda to deny their existence. Their shtick is really no different than an American promoting pro-American news in other geographic locations and countries and promoting it as alternative, simply because it provides a contrary message to that nation's mainstream media. Taking Tucker Carlson and promoting those talking points in Russia might accomplish the same task. The only problem is that Russian state media actually loves Tucker Carlson. This is not anti-imperialism. It is anti-some imperialism while being fine with other imperialism and oppressive abusive governments whose stance against the Western hegemon is predicated on opposition to concepts such as universal human rights. Again, why this crowd dismisses such things as wokeism and culture wars, they are themselves the reactionaries. To that point, this is a group of professional entertainers and lifelong third-party hustlers that, aside from surface-level rhetoric, align with, or at the very least are sympathetic towards, reactionary right-wing politics. This is important to understand because part of their divisive message is a projection upon the left with goals ranging from mere profit to creating disunity. Their argument is that you must form an alliance with those who might potentially be seeking social, legal, legislative, or physical ways to disenfranchise your friends, family members, loved ones, and members of your community, or potentially you yourself. That we must look past those causes to unite in another cause, which to these people is superior, as they minimize your cause, your family's cause, your community's causes. This, my friend, is the essence of fourth position theory. The main action point in this abhorrent book is that all must join, including the worst, in opposition to the Western hegemon. So you work with bigots, dictators, fascists, proto-fascists, and right-wing fundamentalists while dismissing those who are being harmed in doing so, potentially to defeat Western neoliberalism. And not only in critique of foreign policy, while excusing and justifying those policies of other nations, especially Russia, but in ideological opposition to minority rights, LGBTQ rights, and overall human rights. Speak of solidarity with these populations in this group, and you'll immediately be labeled CIA to deflect from the consequences of what it is that they are proposing. In a moment of astonishing honesty from this group, Jackson Hinkle stated as much, or at least suggested it. Hinkle had a debate, in quotes, with Michael Tracy, for whom I regularly disagree with myself. I have no doubt that this was as authentic as professional wrestling. However, the response to this debate is very telling. Hinkle says, supporting Russia is anti-war. Russia isn't battling the West or Ukraine. It is deeper than that. They are defeating absolute evil. This is the last war against humanity. Russians are the only people who have found it in their hearts to defend truth. This provides insight because it shows that there is a ideological through line in this support with Russia and potentially in this Rage Against the War Machine movement itself, or event or corporation or whatever it is that you want to call it. Now, you might be saying, okay, but Jackson Hinkle says a lot of dumb things, and that's true. But isn't he who created this narrative? It's actually the political and ideological forces behind Russian imperialism for whom these people are directly or indirectly advocating on behalf of. And if you're watching this slide, I have various images of Russian politicians talking about how the battle in Ukraine is a battle against Satan. I have a headline of Putin talking about how the U.S. wants to push gender perversions on Russian youth. And I have a quote from Alexander Dugin from fourth position theory, in which he is saying that postmodernity, represented by the West in this book, Globalization, Post-Liberalism, is easily recognized as a kingdom of the Antichrist. There's a lot of ideology involved with this, as well as all of the extremists, whether they be racial, whether they be traditionalists, what have you, Eurasianists, etc. And that can get complicated. But it's important to note that Hinkle actually came clean for a moment about how this is more than just the West or Ukraine. In this theory, having solidarity with marginalized and oppressed groups stands in the way of multipolarity, advocating for other forms of imperialism. And in this case, specifically Russian imperialism, which, by the way, is why the focus is on the Ukraine war specifically. Doing so, having solidarity with human beings internationally, is depicted as a form of Western chauvinism. In having solidarity, you are imposing your views and culture upon others, because in this anti-hegemonic view of the world, these things are not inherent rights, but instead cultural constructs used as subversive methods to unseat governments and color revolutions at the behest of the West. The people involved matter nothing to that scenario. Rage Against the War Machine has no international solidarity with people, but instead governments. Power is not the issue for them, but simply who wields it and how that benefits them personally. This is why these folks refuse to criticize governments worldwide. In fact, unless activists are aligned with their political perspective, the victims for whom the left shares solidarity with are dismissed wholeheartedly, while cops and governments are supplied excuses. This, in and of itself, is divisive, of course, either by design or stupidity. This serves to fracture the left and replace it with a reactionary, imperialist, or perhaps sub-imperialist ideology. This is why these folks have meltdowns over Red-Brown Alliance critiques and immediately equate this to communists working with Nazi skinheads, for which they would never do. The framing of it in right-wing caricature, coupled with deflection to other critiques, is a mechanism implemented to dodge what is clearly apparent not only to the left, but to these people as well. What is apparent is that they are aligned with reactionary forces for whom they are demanding nothing of to join in this alliance, while all others must overlook those same forces that directly or indirectly seek to disenfranchise them. The left knows the opposite to be good faith, that anyone is welcome to join in solidarity for any number of causes, but in order to do so, they must leave their baggage at the door. It is incumbent upon them, as it was the young patriots, to leave their garbage behind, and obviously not incumbent upon those targeted by it to make accommodations for it. What these people are calling wokeism or culture wars includes not only victims of imperialism, which they don't care about, but also members of the working class. Both include minorities who face institutional, social, and legal prejudice in many countries, as well as LGBTQ members, etc. This is ignored by these people because they use a fake anti-war stance and misrepresentations of Marxism to justify their reactionary politics, which at the end of the day is all that they offer. This is what makes people upset, including myself. And this is the 4chan trolling aesthetic at play in it as well. We do have empathy for and seek to become an ally and advocate for people in the United States and globally who are victims of persecution. Seeing others attempt to confuse, misinform, but mostly act in bad faith and lie about what it is they are doing is frustrating, as their actions have nothing to do with solidarity and in many ways act to further persecution in the name of a greater good, which is a lie, but also a greater paycheck, which is a truth. I just said a lot of stuff, and believe me, I want to say more that includes creative use of expletives. But now it's time for me to prove some of the things that I've stated to you. To help me with this, I'll be talking to Renee Johnston. Before that discussion, I'd like to add a bit of context. I made a series of videos about a half a year ago that discussed some of these very topics in depth. One is called Nazballs, Why Are Left Accounts Posting Right-Wing Content? And the other, Left-Right Alliance, Marxism, Campism, Alt-Imperialism, and Faux Populism. Quite a title. One showed the ideological origins of Dugin's politics, focusing on Weimar politics of National Bolshevism, and the framing of Western powers, United States, Great Britain, France, being symbolized in the Versailles Treaty, the League of Nations, multiculturalism, and alliance with Volk, literally and conceptually as a template for which Dugin uses to justify his excuses for Russian imperialism. In his narrative, it is the US, EU, and NATO against traditionalism and various forms of bigotry. Inherent in that recomposition of Weimar-era politics is the destruction of Ukraine as part of the Novorossiya project to expand Russian territory, sometimes based on race. This, along with the financial interests, is why the Rage Against the War Machine crowd has chosen to focus on Ukraine. Bad faith Western actors are copying this rhetoric themselves in the form or Trojan horse of multipolarity and Russian propaganda. The narrative linchpin in my previous video describing this far more in depth was fallen cult leader and sexual abuser Caleb Maupin, as he has direct ties to Alexander Dugin. Caleb is part of the pro-war money grab, by the way, as CPI is a sponsor. He shockingly got so upset at this observation that he decided to make an hour video on it. The ecosystem and cross-pollination of those like Jimmy Dore, Caleb Maupin, and Jackson Hinkle was discussed in the other video about left-right alliance that showed the inherently reactionary politics involved in their messaging. That video also discussed the People's Party as a political manifestation of this ideology, which to that point had largely been relegated to grift from YouTube channels. That video showed how it isn't imperialism that's rejected, but imperialism which competes with other imperial or sub-imperial powers, specifically Russia. Solidarity with oppressed peoples is redefined as neoliberalism and merged with Western foreign policy to create a neoliberal hegemon similar to what Dugin writes about. Domestically, that meant aligning with MAGA, the current political manifestation of reactionary right, anti-Semitic, racist politics in the United States. The working class and rural America is redefined into this political manifestation by those with little to no authentic connection to those people or areas. That checks the box for a modern book, so central to Weimar National Bolshevism, but also to Dugin's conservative traditionalism as a key tenet to his multipolarity. I want to pause here, first to give props, but also to say that if you aren't familiar with some of the names that have been discussed to this point and you don't want to watch my admittedly long videos or listen to a four-hour podcast, then check out the series of articles by Liberty Torch Media. These articles are written from a place of genuine outrage of the Libertarian Party in concert with Rage Against the War Machine. It does an excellent job of discussing the speakers and controversy surrounding the events. It will be linked in the description of this video or podcast for audio listeners. Now back to the event. It's being talked about in all the wrong places. It's being hyped up on 4chan. It's being talked about on Gab, some of the worst safe havens of reactionaries. It's very popular on VK, the Russian social media platform that's great for conducting research on Russian extremists such as Wagner Group and Ruzik and their support for US right-wing bigotry. But ultimately, as we often do, we end up with good old white nationalists. This is unfortunate for Chris Hedges, another participant who says that we have to have a left-right alliance in this pro-war money grab, as he stated that he wouldn't work with bigots. Well, I mean, I don't know. You might not be working with them directly, but they sure do support the cause. So there's your alliance. You see, white nationalists love Russian imperialism because they share many of the same goals, steeped in traditionalism, conservatism, etc. And they share many of the same enemies, concepts of universal human rights, for instance. Many of the things that were directly written in fourth position theory and manifested in the modern multipolar critique. Stepping back from the ideology just for a few sentences here, I'm sure that there are people who legitimately, have ignorance on the topic, don't understand why it's a problem for many of the speakers who will be at this event and sponsors to be on shows like Tucker Carlson, except Caleb. I don't know if he's going to make it because of the sex stuff and the cult stuff. And, you know, actually, now I'm thinking about it, Nick has some sex stuff too. And Ritter does as well. There's actually a lot of people involved with this that have a history of sexual abuse allegations against them. But anyway, aside from that, probably are people not up on it saying, what's the problem with talking to MAGA? What's the problem with talking to Tucker Carlson, who is a rich white reactionary man, a part of Rupert Murdoch's global right-wing media empire? But all of that aside, this comes from a place of ignorance on the topic and privilege. However, that's fine, and we're all wrong. I've been wrong, and sometimes I've been wrong from a position of privilege. This can be addressed with an open mind and self-critique, which is something that this movement is clearly not interested in. But in this, a modern version of historical Red-Brown Alliance can be found. It goes back to the concept of Volk and Dugin's reinterpretation of it and the forming of MAGA into it. Hence, MAGA tanky, MAGA communism, left-right populist alliance, whatever you want to say. However, that might be too indirect and have too many words for some people. So let's just cut to the chase. Stormfront is also loving this event, as mentioned earlier. So again, we might want to reconsider who it is that we're aligning with, looking at you, Mr. Hedges. At the bottom of the post, we see some info on Ron Paul. Ron Paul, the figure who sent out racist newsletters and whose social media team has posted racist tweets. The man who has relied on any number of global anti-Semitic conspiracies to push his BS that's been wrapped up in the militia movements. The Ron Paul whose presidential campaign gave us Elmer Stuart Rhodes, convicted seditionist. So again, Chris, me, you might want to think about this. But at the bottom, there's a link, and anyone who has watched my recent videos, you'll know exactly what this link is. When we click on that link, we get brought to a Christian identity site. Isn't that just amazing? Christian Identity, being one of the players in the coalition formed during the 1950s, which evolved over the 1960s and 70s of anti-Semites, racists, and anti-desegregationalists, anti-communists, and tax protesters, which birthed organizations like the Aryan Nations, which also served to form the modern mainstreamed extreme right of the United States, for which the people at Rage Against the War Machine are saying you should align yourself with. If you want to learn more about this, watch my last video. So there's some evidence, and is there more? Yes, of course there's more, but I think that you're beginning to get the point. These people are reactionaries themselves and are using pro-Russian imperialist messaging to integrate reactionary politics into the left, which simultaneously or concurrently divides the left. That is an inherent goal of Dugin's work and what we see at play here. Now, I'm going to talk to Renee, who can add additional insight and perspective into the sham event. All right. Okay, so Renee is here, and Renee Johnston, we spoke about a half a year ago now, and I saw a lot of things that you were putting up on Twitter. And we were just talking about this before recording. I wanted to talk to you about some of these topics because honestly, you are more intelligent and better informed than I am on them. And so I did immediately think, what's Renee considering with this? And I saw that you were on it. So I wanted to get your opinion on some of this stuff here. And when we met a while ago, 6 months ago or so, we were talking about the People's Party back then and the issues with it. And we talked about a lot of issues, but I was thinking about some of the basic organizing issues that you had discussed, talking about the structure of it organizationally and what that meant to Nick, who is kind of the head of that. And I wanted to kind of revisit that. Because the People's Party and Nick are, of course, a big part of Rage Against the War Machine. And so I wanted to start with that because I think it's going to lead to some questions about what's going on with Rage Against the War Machine. So with the People's Party, I mean, just the organ, the how it was organized and how it benefited Nick and some of the finances with that. What do you recall about your experience there?
So the People's Party as an organization was supposed to be starting the new third party, right? They were going to be breaking the duopoly. And they initially set up, I believe, as a 527, and then they became a 501c3. And there were all these very questionable, like, what exactly is the fiscal responsibility of what the organization was. In the end, the org itself, which is actually People for a Working Democracy, it's not actually Movement for a People's Party. That's kind of what they morphed into and in one of the DBAs, is owned by Nick. So he is
Owned by Nick.
responsible for, yeah, oh yeah, he's it's his name on the dotted line, right? And so once they did their like little fake voting for who was going to be the chairperson for the national committee, and he got voted in by like whatever it was, like 2% of the people or whatever. So, you know, he's still in charge, and his father is the head of the finance committee, and they file taxes, but everything's very like, it's very gray, like it's very smoky, right? It's all smoke and mirrors. There's a ton of stuff because you don't have to, by IRS standards, there's certain things you don't really have to lay out very clearly. So they use all of those loopholes to their absolute like benefit. So there are large chunks of money that just get combined into one amount and they're not tracked, and there's no way to tell like where exactly that money went and what it was spent on or who exactly it came from. You know, so in the end, the organization itself is as murky as the two parties that already exist. And on top of that, we're now working on like 6 years. They haven't run one candidate anywhere. They were going to fight in Florida, I think, for somebody who was maybe going to run for a sheriff's seat or something like that. And that didn't pan out to anything. So they're like a, you know, it's like a empty sandwich, right? Like they've got no filler. They're all like, it's
It's like a
all
slush.
the stuff on the outside, and there's no substance in there. There's nothing going. But meanwhile, Nick is collecting a check. We found out that he pays himself, I think, like $1,750 every other week to do
Okay.
what? We're not, you know, no one's actually sure.
That's not
That is in
bad.
the IRS documents. Yeah, you know, he's making a little bit of money. You know, I think he still lives with his mother, so I'm sure that money comes in handy since you don't have to pay rent.
But
That was mean.
so the People's Party as a legal entity, I suppose, or from the view of the IRS, is an organization that's literally owned by Nick, and then his family members are involved with the financing of that,
Yeah,
right?
they have there's a few people listed for like within whenever you know you have your articles of corporations, so you have to list the different people who are head of specific, you know, things within the organization. So there are people outside of Nick's family that are listed in the actual documents. I don't know how many of those people are still actually part of People's Party. They're not, I don't really see them doing much outside of like tweeting. So I don't, and I'm blocked. So, you know, I only know what they tweet when somebody else sends it to me. So I really don't know what purpose they're serving. But, you know, when you start looking at Nick's and People's Party's part in this rally, it's important that people understand that he started a whole other company just for this rally,
That was going to be my
right?
next
So
kind of thing. That was my next question, because I thought I know that they're involved, and I know that we talked about a lot more than this, and I'll mention that video for people listening to check that out, our podcast. But when we were discussing what we might talk about, you also talked about how Rage Against the War Machine is registered as a non-stock corporation. Is that accurate?
Yeah, oh yeah, they're registered in the state of Virginia as a non-stock, and they also filed as a 501c4 nonprofit with the federal government.
And is that so? Would Nick be involved with that?
Oh yeah, it's only two people the two people listed on the documentation, it's him and the lady from, I can't remember her name, from the Libertarian Party, from the NYSIS caucus. So it's two people listed on the corporation. So.
Okay. Well, I mean, I knew that it's kind of, that's why I want to
it's so bizarre. The whole thing is so bizarre. Like, you started an entire corporation and filed as a 501c4, which means you can give money to a political party,
right?
Because that's what the 501c4 is. You're not bound. You can't, you know, you're not bound by those limitations where you can't give to political parties and political people.
Yeah.
And so you're raising all this money. It's not tax deductible for people who donate because it's a 501c4, not a 501c3.
Right.
You started out with one goal for your fundraising. You met that goal. So then you raised the limit for your fundraising. Oh, yeah. You've now met that goal. Right. You've met that goal. You've surpassed it. I mean, they're at like $88,000 now, right?
I'm still not.
$83,000. They haven't turned off the fundraising. The goal was $68,000.
I'm not even there yet. I'm still trying to figure out how there's two names on this corporation. I mean, it just, you know, I can like see when things are a grift. You know, like I know if I'm getting conned. I'm not as intelligent about this stuff as you are, but I know the basics. And, you know, looking at this, I was like, this is a grift, you know, and then you see some of the people involved and you're like, okay, you know, they're making money on this. I get it. But then just talking about what the People's Party is, not from any other perspective, but like the IRS, you know, and then what you just said about Rage Against the War Machine and what this is, it, the same way, if I'm, you know, an accountant, like what is this? I mean, I need to catch up to you because I'm not there yet. That kind of blows my mind a little bit. So, and I hope people listening understand what that means, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm mortified by it. So, all right. So let me back up a little bit. So before you can file for any level of, you know, we're a nonprofit, we're not tax deductible, all those things, you have to be an actual thing. You have to have like some status of an organization or a corporation or something, yeah. LLC, whatever it is. So I don't know what caused Nick and this woman to decide that they were going to start a whole new business just for this rally, right? I don't know why it was necessary because they're both already part of organizations.
Yeah.
That both file because you already have like a legal standing as a thing in the eyes of the government. And right. When you think about libertarians specifically and how anti-government they are, that we even went down this path of like, we're going to start a whole other organization that's going to be like monitored by the government. But okay, we'll leave that alone. So they, you know, so they went down the path of creating an entity so that they could make that entity a 501c4.
Right.
So that they could raise money. Right. But the question that people should ask is, where is that money going to go? Because you started out and said, oh, we just need to be able to do the rally. You threw out $45,000, which in my opinion is an absurd amount of money to be trying to raise to go stand outside and say, we don't want war, right?
I don't know if I've been to a protest where that was like the collective ownership of money involved.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I've never heard.
And then on top, let's not forget on top of that, they're charging people for sponsorships. So this is all separate from like this gold level sponsor and silver level sponsor and bronze level sponsor. So you're getting money also for those things. On top of that, you are definitely getting a cut from this company that's making your shirts that you're sending people to because the money's all coming, you know, the money's coming back to the rally, supposedly. So they're probably well over $100,000 at this point, to be honest, with what they've raised. What? And supposedly, like, the point is just to say you don't want war. What do you need? I like, where is this money going? And no one's ever going to know where the majority of this money went. They came up with this supposed, like, you know, they had an invoice from some company that was doing the soundstage or whatever. And I'll be honest, I found the company. I didn't dox them. I didn't post it when I found it. It was just for my own curiosity, but I did figure out where the company is. And they're based out of Baltimore. So why they have an invoice for 5 days, your rally's on a Sunday afternoon, you're invoicing for 5 days for setup. This is DC. You're not setting up a stage in front of the Lincoln Memorial the whole thing is just bizarre. But the invoice is for like $37,000.
I mean, like, what? It sounds all like a lot of people just making money off each other. But I mean, what, even before that, because I want to get to the website and like how it's set up with the money, you know, goal. But like the way you just, what you're describing to me has nothing to do, first of all, with a protest. Like, I've never been at a protest like that had any of this stuff involved. I've been to a lot of protests, you know. I mean, and a rally, I mean, I've been to rallies, I've been sponsored by organizations, but I mean, this sounds like an event, you know, like some type of organized event, like a concert.
This sounds like
something.
This is like a concert. Yeah. Yeah, it's like a concert.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, yeah.
Doran Hinkle were together on something, and I don't watch either one of them. And yeah. I was on with someone else, and they played a clip of the two of them talking. And they're like, oh, it's going to be a great time. Like, where are you going? Are you like, are we going to a comedy show? I don't understand. Like, this is supposed to be the kickoff to the anti-war movement.
Right.
How?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think, and a lot of people have made it, and maybe we'll get there, maybe we won't. But, you know, the idea that this has, it's not an anti-war movement, like, or an anti-war event. Like, we know that, right? A lot of people are fine with war. But it's also just not even a protest, you know, like I hadn't cognitively gotten there either. But yeah, I mean, it's not, to me, that's not a rally or a protest. This is an event, and there's going to be a lot of money made on that event. And it's kind of posing or presenting as a protest, I suppose, or a rally, but kind of like the People's Party and this Rage Against the War Machine as a corporation. That blows my mind as well. You know, I'm naive when I think about these parties, you know, and I say, well, you know, generally these are, you know, like grassroots organizations that you kind of have to scrape by, and you meet up and make your own signs and things like that. And yeah, that has nothing to do with any of the things that we talked about in my view of what protesting is, what rallies are, what anti-war movements are. This sounds more like a few business ventures, to be honest, that are holding an event to make money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'm just naive.
I don't think you are, because I think a lot of people see anti-war,
yeah,
Rage Against the War, and they're like, yes, 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 we got to stop war.
Sure.
Which,
yeah,
that's totally reasonable, right?
Yeah.
And I don't even begrudge like that you're doing like the we want to stop wars. I just don't like the lie. Like, it's a lie.
It's
right?
A lie.
Like, you're bring, yeah,
it's a lie.
You're bringing a lot of people who aren't actually against war, right?
Oh,
and
yeah,
you're giving
yeah,
like,
yeah,
like that's a whole other range, right?
It's like, a whole other, like, we don't even need to get there. It's like, what you're doing isn't that. Forget the people involved. It's even just the way that's being organized isn't that. This isn't an anti-war protest,
right?
You know, but what,
no,
maybe
no,
we'll get to
it's to make money. It's yeah, it's to make money. This is my honest opinion.
Yeah,
they were trying to find a way to make money and to get people's names, numbers, and email addresses to add to their membership list.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah,
to yeah, present both of these groups as like real potential for people to walk away from the duopoly. Now, the reality is the Mises Caucus has caused such a problem within the Libertarian Party that they are totally split. the Libertarian Party, because they're people who don't want any part of what the Mises Caucus is about, who are the old school libertarians.
For people that don't know, why, what does that have to do with Rage Against the War Machine?
So if, because it's a 501c3,
yeah,
they can give their money to a political party. The right. People's Party is not a political party.
Right.
They don't, they are not a political party, right? They don't. They've gotten like limited partial party status in some states, which requires them to actually be like active and run people and get signatures. And they don't have people to do any of that stuff. So that's not happening. The Libertarian Party actually exists.
Right.
It's actually a political party. They actually have state parties. So is that where your money's going to end up going? Possibly. You're never going to know if that's where it ends up going. Yeah. They're never going to tell you that.
They're listed on the website as a sponsor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Yeah. And I, yeah. So before we do that, with the opaque fundraising, you know, I've participated in fundraising goals, and you go on a website or something, or maybe it's not even that tech, it's analog, and you have like a poster board and you color in with a red marker and you say, we're here, you know. But in all forms I've been involved in with, you know, either it's politics or nonprofits or volunteering, whether it's a piece of cardboard that's cut off or whether it's a website with a strip or something, there's an end to it, right? Because there's a goal. And you started talking about this. What, that's not what happened, at least, or is happening with Rage Against the War Machine, right?
No. So when I first got hip to like the whole fundraising thing, they were trying to get to $45,000.
Right.
People were asking, why do you need $45,000? And they were saying, you know, stage and
speaker fees,
whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever stuff that they were putting out there for why they needed that much money. So they got to the $45,000, and then it went up to $68,000 because the fees in DC and what, I mean, I don't know any fees for anything in any state where you're going to spend $20,000, but okay.
Yeah. Maybe they're just their planning and they didn't know that, right?
Fine. Yeah. So they've now crushed the 68,000. They're at, when I checked earlier today, they were at like 83,000 and change. They're still collecting money. So my purview is, if you had a goal because you needed to make sure you had enough funds to cover this thing that you were doing, right? Why have you not shut off your fundraising? Like, why? You didn't announce, like, we're gonna up it again to 85,000 because these things are needed, right? It's just going to keep going. And people are never going to know where their money went. And that for me is really problematic, because for some people, it might not be a big deal to give $100, to give whatever. But for some people who are legitimately just anti-war and they're going strictly by what the website posts as their like 10 demands or whatever it is, and they're hoping to be a part of something that's going to push towards actually ending war.
Yeah,
I just don't see that that's where the money's going to go. And Nick has a proven track record of being really shady with people's money. And so I don't have any faith that he's going to be any less shady than he was and still is at MPP with people's money, that he's going to be with this rally. So he has now created a new funding source, because, you know, MPP is a mess and they've been consistently spending more money than they're raising. And so he's just simply created a new source of space where people can give money for him to collect, because you could technically pay yourself anything as part of a nonprofit. There's not really a limit, as long as if someone sues, you can prove that it was reasonable, you know, to pay yourself that amount. So there's, you know, I don't Is he paying speakers? Is he like, I don't know. I have no understanding of why they need $83,000 to bring a bunch of people together to say we don't want to participate in wars anymore.
There, you know, even with that, there's just listening, and you know, the more cynical side of my existence, you know, I'm listening to that, and it can, you know, you can make a lot of things a reality, right? And so, you know, it, even if you're saying maybe these are speakers' fees, a lot of the people who are speaking are just buddies with these guys anyway, you know, and they go on each other's podcasts, mm-hmm. and they go on each other's YouTube shows, etc. And I mean, you know, to me, it sounds like you're making a job for your friend as a kickback, essentially, and that, you know, we're all going to make right. good money on this one, right? But if the public asks, mm-hmm. you can say, well, yeah, you know, but there were additional unforeseen licensing fees and, you know, things with the city and state. And then, you know, also we had these speaker fees. But, you know, a lot of that is, you know, your buddies and friends professionally or otherwise that are doing the setup or are doing the speaking. We're talking about a lot of these people. It's, I mean, to me, that's right. what I, you know, but it is.
Yeah. And I mean, that's how it feels to me. And, yeah. you know, these people, not for nothing, but Jimmy Dore's a millionaire. He don't. It's not you even know, like they're bringing together people who are like refugees and like none of these guys don't.
No, these people aren't.
People are not. It's really and I see people who like Roger Waters, who just signed on for whatever reason and apparently isn't even going to actually be there. It's like a video
thing.
Cast of like
now.
His speech or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm like, how did you get roped into being party to this nonsense? Like, I was really annoyed with the Green Party. I'm a registered Green Party voter, and yep. I'm literally like, I looked at the documents that I need to change my registration. Like, I don't want to be party to people's nonsense, right? Like, shit is hard enough. People can't survive. Homelessness is at an all-time high. Like, the prison population is out of control. Racist police violence is out of control. People are still going broke with medical bills. Like, there's so many things that are wrong. Like, I don't want to be party to a group of people who signed on to give legitimacy to fucking nonsense. Like, I don't.
It's a spectacle.
I mean, it's interest in being a part of that. It is.
I was talking to you a little bit before, and I was like, I don't want to. I had that cognitive mental health check of like, do I even want to get involved in this topic? Because it does piss me off, you know, and it does because it's a spectacle. And, you know, in a sense, stepping right. back from it, whatever it whatever thing that you're involved in, you know, and there's many great causes and people are involved in a lot of different things. The thing that is upsetting and you know, with purpose, you know, I do believe that there is carryover from that, you know, 2015, 2016 4chan culture of trolling. I do think that that's an aesthetic and messaging part of this, but, you know, it's that these people are not only just dumping on legitimate causes and dumping on populations of people who really do genuinely need help, you know, while ignoring organizations that exist already that do try to help people in many different ways, that people go to work for not much money or volunteer at these things, and they're never talked about, you know, in this. But it's this group of people that already have a bunch of money, and they're monetizing a way to lie and like gaslight and to me, just like insult, right? People who are actually legitimately involved in this at whatever level, whether it's politically or grassroots with a nonprofit or whatever, you know, it's just to me like a spectacle of capitalism. You know, it's like this, it's almost clownish right. in a way, but extremely cruel, you know? And it's doubly upsetting with the notion that, and this might be moving along, the excuse that this is actually coalition building or something, right? To where you're just mm-hmm. insulting You're insulting victims and you're insulting people who do their best to legitimately help, oftentimes at personal expense or finance or, you know, many different emotional, economic, you know, things that they compromise to do that, where they could be doing other things like having events and making money. There's also that idea of like, this is also dividing, right? Because it is creating arguments that didn't exist before, right? Arguments of, and you can talk about this, you know, why are there people at an anti-war rally who aren't anti-war? Why is it that I need to associate with reactionary people and people with far right conservative reactionary social cut? Why is it that's being placed upon me or you, right, to accept that and accommodate that, and not the other way around, which is traditionally in my lifetime how it's been when you are organizing on any level, on any topic, whether we're talking about race, feminism, gender, economics, whatever, that in certain situations, for instance, I'm going to be the one to leave the baggage at the door, right? And that's okay, and I can participate, right? But not this other way around. And it does seem as if, whether it's meant to or not, but that it is divisive to the left too. I don't know. That was a lot. What do you think about that?
So what I get a lot in response to me talking about my concerns with this, because when you bring people to the table at an anti-war rally who are not anti-war, right, they have alternate agendas for why they're participating, right? Why they want to be in front of a group of people speaking about whatever it is that they plan to speak about. And some of these people are anti some wars, anti-nuclear war, anti-this war specifically, not really anti-war, but anti-sending money for war.
Exactly, benefits war, their state.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, there's pieces that fit. But when you have someone who has very clearly stated that they support Putin because Putin is against transgender people.
Yeah.
And they elevate this idea of criminalizing transgender people, right? Then not only are you not anti-war, you are supporting one side of a war because you are a bigot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
That's the coalition with MAGA. Yeah.
Right. So what are you going to speak about? Because you're not anti-war, right? Yeah. You've chosen a side.
Yeah.
And you've chosen that side because you are an equal level of bigotry as the side that you chose.
You brought me to a place I ended up going to get to there.
Right. So, yeah, right. Going. Like, but that's the issue, right? Like, yeah. How do you put that in place and then expect people who are being oppressed because of their personal choices to stand next to these people and say, okay, I'm going to forget my life, literally, and I'm going to support your partial kind of sort of not really anti-war stance because you're not actually anti-war. Like, it is absurd, right? And when you bring up that you have people like Jackson Hinkle, who basically the other day in some interview was like, oh, well, I don't even know why people are making such a big deal about slavery. They were slaves in Africa, right? So you want me to go stand next to that moron, right? And pretend like
it's incumbent upon you to do so.
He's giving me some information. Right. Like, it's my responsibility to go stand with the bigot.
Right.
Right. And pretend, because he's also not anti-war, right? So what am I siding with these people about, right? So when I say these things, it comes back to I'm being divisive. It's me with my expectation that people should respect my humanity,
right?
And respect the humanity of others and respect people's right to just live however they choose to live because they don't need to explain it to you, right?
Yep.
And I should dismiss all of that for the cause that the bigot thinks is most important. Yeah. How does that work?
I have a lot that I want to say, but I think that I, for the folks listening, I feel like I had already said that earlier in the finished product of this. So I'm going to hold my tongue, although it's hard, but it does remind me of
It's tough.
Yeah, man. It's hard not to say this, but it reminds me of the article that you wrote about political horseshoe theory, because when we talked last time, 6 months ago, we were talking about the same BS, but at that time, it was Jimmy Dore and Caleb Maupin talking, I think, about how, oh, it's okay mm-hmm. because, you know, Black people worked with the KKK or something, where you...
Which is all nonsense.
Concisely pointed out that's not what happened, right? The Young Patriots put their BS to the side in order to gain entrance into this coalition, right?
Right.
I mean, that's
And I've actually learned a lot. I've learned a lot about the Young Patriots, because it turns out they weren't quite what everybody believed them to be. They were already communists. They were already, you know, against the system. They already, you know, they were already on their way to understanding that the divides that were created were really an effort of the ruling class to keep everybody else out, you know, from getting a piece of the pie. So it wasn't, I don't know that it was that big of a leap for the Young Patriots to work in the Rainbow Coalition. Yeah. I found a really great website about them where they said, like, we recognize that racism was a problem and we weren't going to be party to that to our own detriment, essentially, you know. And so it's important for people to understand that this is right. Like, this is how coalitions should work, right? Yes. It shouldn't be about me eating the shit of a racist so that I can go along with the thing that the racist thinks is most important, right? That's not how coalition works. Coalition works with the racist saying, you know what? My racism is not as important as all the other things that need to get done. So I'm going to put that aside, and then we're going to work on this thing together. And in the process, in all likelihood, because, you know, race is this false construct anyway, if you can get somebody temporarily to put that aside, they're probably going to let it go, because it doesn't take long to realize that these things that you believe in your mind about other people are simply nonsense, right? Like, in the end, race is like this fake thing that was made up to make sure that you feel like you're better than me, so that every, you know, the people at top can say, like, okay, so you get this little bit more than she gets.
Yeah,
but there's, it's not based on anything real.
Go.
No, it's just, it's okay. It's just, it's the same thing. Like, it's the same.
Yeah.
It's the same constant, like, perpetuation of, you are the one who is allowing this division to continue. And instead of recognizing that it's okay for me not to want to participate in that, you are then going to gaslight and blame me for the division, because I simply want to be respected because I'm a person.
Yeah. And I do think, optimistically, a willing suspension of disbelief, that there are some people who are just ignorant about, I guess, ignorant about everything that you just discussed, you know, and that maybe need to be talked through that to understand the issues with it. But I'm also not naive to the point that when I hear what you're saying, and I hear people who are making a lot of money, who, while I sit here and I say you're so stupid, clearly aren't stupid in some ways, because they're profiting on this, you know, and so they're intelligent at something, making money, I suppose. But, you know, when I hear this, I'm hearing essentially a way to divide a movement, right? Of me coming in and saying, you know, look, the old way didn't work, or whatever. This is the new way. This is the new hashtag. This is a new corporation. This is what we're doing. We're all coming together. Oh, but by the way, right? You know, you're an African American woman. We're not going to talk about race in this, right? And we're going to have folks like Ron Paul, you know, be involved, and we're going to have people like Jackson Hinkle, you know, be involved, and you know, it's your bad if you say anything.
Yeah.
To me, that's done purposefully to divide, right? I mean,
and it's also done to silence me.
Oh yeah,
right? It's also done to silence me, though, right?
No, it's like, done to insult.
It's also to make sure that I am put in my place as a Black person to be reminded that the things that are material to my ability to survive and thrive in this country, I am reminded that those things are not important.
Yeah.
Right. But that's not as important as the thing that the white people who are right now in charge of this thing.
Before it was class, right? And they talked a lot about economics, Medicare for all and things like that. Now it's the anti-war movement, you know, and they've shifted to that. But yeah, you know, I mean, first of all, it's marginalizing you, right? And so you're no longer a part of this movement because you got upset because of your race stuff, right? So now you're not a part of the anti-war movement, right? Mm-hmm. And if I say that's messed up, you know, but I'm a white guy, and I'm like, what you're saying is messed up, then I'm woke, right? And all of a sudden, I'm a woke imperialist or something, right? And I'm no longer a part of the anti-war movement. It seems to me like it's just breaking apart these different movements, you know? And I don't, you know, it could be giving these people too much credit. I don't know. But I mean, I think first and foremost, it's probably about making money, you know? But when some of the things that you said were extremely insightful about looking at the global hegemon, right, or the West, or imperialism, right, and you talking about like certain laws in Russia, for instance, and how those have been latched onto by people. I want to get into that because I think I covered that earlier, but I do think that there's more to it than just making money. I really do. And maybe that's me being conspiratorial, but I also don't know why you bring in someone like Ron Paul, you know, or you bring in like musicians that, you know, have played for like the Oath Keepers and stuff. Like, I don't know why you choose to do that unless you do have another goal, right? Or it's just a big coincidence. I don't know.
I mean, you know, Nick made a big, he did a whole interview and did a whole thing about he's not progressive and he's not on the left. He's going to work with the right, you know, towards break and being anti-establishment. You know, I don't even know, like, I'm still trying to understand who he thinks the establishment is, because he's now working with, of all people, like Tulsi Gabbard, who's literally still in the military.
don't look too far, because it can lead you to bad places. I've been in those
right
places.
I mean, it's you know, it's bizarre to me, and I just want people to be honest, right? And I said this to you before we started filming, I think, like, if you want to go out and be a bigot and you want to raise money because you're a bigot and you want to bring all the bigots together and you're all going to, like, you know, chant and dance and talk and do whatever you're going to do and enjoy your bigotry, there are plenty of people who will fund that.
Yeah, just do it.
I mean, literally, there are a lot of people who will give money and appreciate your bigotry, and that's fine. Do not hide your bigot, right? And don't hide your bigotry under the umbrella of anti-war.
And this is what I mean.
And then,
yeah,
right. And then get mad at me for lifting the cover and saying, "There's a lot of bigotry going on underneath this tent, right? Like behind this curtain. That's all racism. Like I don't have the patience for it. Like, I am so sick to death of people telling me that my like blatant dislike of racism is the problem.
Yeah.
It is not. My dislike of racism is not the problem. Racism is the problem. Right? Like, that's the problem.
Right.
So
it's not
I don't want to argue with people about it anymore. I'm tired of art. Like, I've gone on more blocking sprees in the past like week and a half than I ever had, because I just don't want to argue with people who are racist, and who want to hide their racism under this, you know, this nonsense that, like, you know, your identity politics is the problem. No, your racism is the problem.
Right. That's, you portray the oppression of people, institutional, social, economic, as something less than, and then giving it a name to dehumanize it and objectify it into something that can be dismissed. That's the problem, right?
right. Yeah. And so when I listen to these people, you know, Dorr and Henkel and all these people who are like sitting around giggling and laughing at people because, oh, they're so silly. You know, they think their identity is going to make a difference when there's nuclear war. There's already war.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Black people are dying every day for one reason or another. Right? The trans population that is dying due to either violence or suicide is gotten completely out of control. Right? Death is everywhere, and it is because the system does not allow for people to just survive, right? For whatever thing that makes them happy, the minute it is not in compliance with the standard, you become an other.
Yep.
People treat you like an other.
Yep.
And then now all of a sudden, all the things that you need in life, like, you know, to be able to walk down the street without getting stopped by police, and like, it's absurd.
All solidarity goes out the window. Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't want to have this conversation about, you know, well, we'll deal with those problems after. Why would I believe that? You ain't fucking dealing with them now.
Right. Right.
You don't care.
It doesn't,
right?
It doesn't
Canada's
hurt them,
about to send warships to Haiti.
Right.
Right? Canada's about to send warships to Haiti.
Yeah.
No one's talking about that. Right?
No one's talking
about the bombs being dropped everywhere. No one's talking about, like, there are so many problems, and you want me to come and stand around and, like, hoot and holler and cheer behind your speaking about the one thing that you decided is right now the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Which coincides with your appearances on, like, RT Media and stuff. And, you know, I mean, it's just so obviously, but. You know, I think that some of the things that you talked about, I mean, I think it's bad faith, and I do think it's the aesthetic of that 2016 4chan culture. You know, I think that it's not that these people are aligning with reactionaries. I think these people are reactionaries, and I do think that it's kind of natural for them to gravitate towards those aesthetics. And call them what they. You know, what you will, maybe in the past, a dirtbag left, and, you know, all these, but I just see reactionary people, you know, and it does, to me, it sounds like the things that you described, which are frustrating to you because you're coming to this in bad faith, to me just sound like trolls. You know, it sounds like Richard Spencer saying, I'm not a Nazi. This isn't the 1940s. This isn't Germany. I just believe in blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like the same BS, but just repack. I don't know. But with the Mrs. Caucus, I did want to include this, and then we can wrap. But you sent me an article from the Black Agenda Report, and I wanted to bring it up. There's a lot of this. I mean, that could be its own thing, but there was one quote that I thought was good, and I wanted to include it because I didn't want it to sound like this was just a bitch fest, you know, with you and I and personal grievance or something. But in that article, because the Libertarian Party is involved in this. Right, either directly or indirectly, you know, they are. There is an interview with somebody who is a member of the Libertarian Party who said that they're going to quit. And the quote that popped out to me was, and I'm going to read it, was, we are a big tent party, but no tent is big enough to hold racists and people of color, transphobe and trans people, bigots and their victims. Right. So the idea that you can't, it's the antithesis of building a coalition when you include people who, by the very definition, are themselves divisive, right? And seek to disenfranchise, marginalize, physically harm, legally harm other members of society, your community, your family, who you should be in solidarity with, right?
And that's, it's perfect. It's perfectly stated. There is no room big enough for people who are oppressed to be standing alongside people who are trying to actively oppress them, and for them both to be working in coordination towards one goal, because they don't have the same goal, right? Mm-hmm. When people would first get mad at me for talking about how important it was to not be dismissive of racism as if it's just a simple difference, right? It's just a difference of opinion. It's not a difference of opinion. It's not, I like chocolate and you like vanilla. It's you don't respect my life and I need you to respect my life. That is not a difference of opinion, right? And so it's important for people to acknowledge that, you know, people just want to live. And you cannot be angry with people who are being very cognizant and aware of the fact that the people you want them to align with don't have an interest in their lives, right? Like they actively don't care about their lives. The Mises Caucus, I think as recently as November, was saying things like we need to repeal the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah. Oh, that's, yeah, yeah.
You know, we can't play this game where we're going to pretend that, you know, we can just, you know, make racism like this small divisive thing that doesn't matter because people are dying because of it. And it's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, so. It is. And I do, maybe to wrap it up, but I do feel like there needs to be a hard no, because this, what this does, and I feel like this is part of the reason why it's happening, is that it attempts to legitimize far right reactionary politics and MAGA and whatever you want. It tries to portray them just like people did after, you know, January 6th, downplaying the seriousness of what was happening. And, you know, I do feel like folks like Dore and Hinkle and the other people involved in this, there's many goals, but one of them is to mainstream what's essentially extremist ideas, right? Or at least what should be extremist ideas, in my view, for people who have generally been on the left, you know, for most of their life, that
right.
The concepts and the consequences of what those concepts are themselves reactionary and extreme. And by doing this, everything that we talked about, right, it's, you're kind of soft, you're making it softer. You're trying to say, no, these are just grandpas in Oklahoma. And, you know, yeah, they like their guns and they're good old boys, but, you know, they want health insurance too. No. Like I do feel like there needs to be a hard line of like, yeah. So if those people would like to enter into a coalition, right? Like the Young Patriots, they can, and no one's telling them they can't, but they also can't bring all their bullshit either, right? And that's not coming upon, and, right. And it goes back to that. I do feel like that's a part of it too, and that there needs to be a hard no in solidarity, and maybe out of all of this, there could be silver lining, right? In which people on the internet and people in the grassroots and people out on the streets will find solidarity in rejection of this BS, right?
Right. And you know, if you welcome people who bring these types of ideologies to the table, what reason do they have to let them go?
Right.
There's no reason for someone to let go of their bigotry, their racism, their misogyny. There's no reason to let any of that go if they're accepted as part of the coalition with those things.
Yeah.
There's no reason to let it go. So the minute you let it in the door, you can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
And it's absurd to think you can.
Yeah. So. There's a lot more I want to talk about, but I'm not going to. That's a whole other
thing. Oh, you have to go do t-ball anyway. It's 6:20. It's 6:22, and the dog and the family all just walked in. So this is good.
For everyone listening, Renee's family walked in, and I have to. I'm a volunteer coach at t-ball, so I'm doing that in about 40 minutes. So I have to jump. But thanks for explaining this to me, and explaining it to
you're welcome. Listening. You're welcome.
There's a lot of new information involved in that talk. I really can't express how much I appreciate Renee meeting with me to talk about this on somewhat short notice. Her understanding of political organization and what that means structurally, legally, financially is just superb. And so I appreciate her giving that insight. But I also appreciate her giving her insight and perspective as an African-American woman as to what this all means to the people that she cares about, to her community, her family, and herself. And I think that while we know that this was not an anti-war event, that this was just the repackaging of pro-war propaganda from another country and having it be presented as a contrarian stance in a different geographic media market or location, Well, we know that this is an event. It's not a protest. It's a for-profit event. We know this is not a movement. It's a corporation. You know, we know all these things. I think that we also know this. The concept of forming an alliance with reactionary right forces in and of itself is divisive, and there's ideological ideas behind doing so. I think we know that failed, and that by the people I've spoken with and looking on social media and on different places on the internet, that there does seem to be a collective effort against this event or whatever you want to call it, that there is solidarity found against this divisiveness and this reactionary politics repackaged as whatever it is that they want to call it. And so I think that the silver lining in it all is that aside from making some profit, these people have ultimately failed. And that while some of them are ideological and some of them are just grifters and clowns in their own rights, there might be a few people that get wrapped up in this who in the past were legitimate, who are now going to have this mark on their career or their legitimacy moving forward. It's going to be something that they have to reconcile, but that's not for us to do. So I think that this is a representation and a very powerful moment for the left in a time of post-truth confusion in which many people are coming together and coming together in rejection of this reactionary garbage.